Welcome, everyone. This is the Rotary Club of Worldwide Impact, and we're excited to share our mission and the work we do as part of Rotary International with all of you today. My name is Kelly, and I'm your host for today's program. Rotary International is a global network of 1.4 million neighbors, friends, leaders, and problem solvers in more than 46,000 clubs, all united in the common goal of making a positive impact in our communities and worldwide. As a Rotary Club, we approach every conversation as an opportunity to learn and grow together. Our goal is to connect with and hear from fascinating and inspiring speakers, often with a message focused on the power of ideas to change lives and ultimately the world, and bring you all a little bit of inspiration that allows you to think about how you can make a difference as well. You may be hearing this on your favorite podcast service, watching it on our YouTube channel, or viewing it on our club's website. If you enjoy the program, share it with a friend and don't forget to leave a good rating and review. We do like 5 stars. Now, today we are pleased to have with us Olivia Reneker. Olivia is a manager of partnerships and philanthropy at Direct Relief, based in Santa Barbara, California. She began her career in software and spent the next 7 years in tech sales. Upon graduating from graduate school in 2022, she knew she wanted to pursue a more fulfilling career path and took a year off from working. She spent the year traveling, exploring, hiking, and volunteering. Sounds amazing. When she was ready to embark on a new journey, the stars aligned and she joined Direct Relief, a top-rated humanitarian aid organization with a mission to improve the health and lives of people affected by poverty or emergencies without regard to politics, religion, or the ability to pay. We're delighted to have Olivia join us today to share an overview of Direct Relief with us. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired. Olivia, over to you.
Thank you so much, Kelly. Hi, everyone. As Kelly so kindly introduced me, my name is Olivia Reneker. I am a manager of philanthropy and partnerships here at Direct Relief. I am based in beautiful Santa Barbara, California, where Direct Relief has been headquartered since its inception 75 years ago. So, Direct Relief was founded in 1948 by a man named William Zimdem after World War II. He and a business associate named Dennis Kartzag were fortunate to make it out of Europe during the war, and they settled into Santa Barbara, California. Once they settled into life in the beautiful coastal town, they were hearing from their family and friends that were back in Europe about the dire need of medical supplies, medicine, food, clothing, et cetera, that the post-war environment had left a lot of people in. Originally, Direct Relief was a volunteer organization that relied on the business skills, network, and money from William Zimdem. He was a very successful businessman in Estonia and Austria. And they began to have a volunteer organization that collected health materials, food, clothing, and other odds and ends in Santa Barbara that they would ship back to Europe. One of my favorite stories actually is from this time in Direct Relief's birth, where the wives of men and their friends would go door to door to doctors' offices asking for old or about to expire sample prescriptions that they would then package back and ship to Europe for the people in need. Eventually, more and more requests of medicine and medical supplies came in and for healthcare related items. So the organization began to pivot and stopped sending things like clothing items and food and began really focusing and honing in on medical supplies. This really began or came from the realization that without good health, pretty much everything is impossible. It's an incredible challenge when you're not feeling well, let alone if you are affected or impacted by an emergency, poverty, war, crisis, and unable to access medicine. So, as such, Direct Relief evolved into an apolitical, non-sectarian organization that helps people who are most in need in a charitable and non-discriminatory manner, regardless of race, gender, nationality, religion, or ability to pay. There is a focus on health, and that is primarily what the organization revolves around. So Direct Relief has, throughout the 75 years of its history, realized that people in low resources communities or communities impacted by crisis are vulnerable to health issues that are costly and debilitating. Through the work of assisting these communities, we also came to realize and discover that the people who are most vulnerable during an emergency are the same people who are most vulnerable before it occurs. So, health issues and responses are not necessarily defined or confined to emergencies, but Direct Relief is really addressing a 365-day-a-year issue for health and access to health. Basically, to boil it down, how we accomplish this is we have grown a network of healthcare providers throughout the world. We identify health facilities throughout the globe, similar to community clinics and hospitals, who meet the needs and serve vulnerable populations. Once that they have been vetted through our process, they have access to Direct Relief's partner portal, which is similar. We kind of liken it to an Amazon marketplace, but instead of like dog toys and cleaning supplies, it's really just a inventory and warehouse full of medical supplies, so that they can access exactly what they need instead of us kind of shipping a plethora of particular items that might not meet their needs or requirements. By allowing our partners to have this marketplace, it empowers them to understand and have access to what they need and how to best serve the people and constituents of their particular clinic. And that way, we're not clogging supply lines or storage of or infrastructure on their end with things that they'll never use. We have an entire warehouse team that is dedicated to collecting the resources within our warehouse. And we deliver them to strengthen the health system and their capacity to react to crisis. So, how does Direct Relief do this? Direct Relief accomplishes its mission by of improving the health and lives of people affected by poverty or emergencies by accessing the right licensing, compliance, and infrastructure, the right partnerships, the right data, and the right product and logistics. So, Direct Relief has a large distribution center based in Santa Barbara, California. The office space that I work in is 30,000 square feet, and the warehouse itself is about 120,000 square feet. Direct Relief has established itself as a wholesale pharmacy through its license from the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy, which is the highest commercial standard. It's similar to what like a Walgreens or CVS pharmacy. I'm not entirely sure what they have abroad, but in the United States, it's a rigorous licensing and compliance process that we have to basically abide by in order to service people and our partners worldwide. Because of that, we have about, within the last 7 years, about 50 major audits by people like the Drug Enforcement Agency, people like the Pharmaceutical Board of the United States. It has empowered us to serve all 50 states and countries worldwide without any red tape. Because of this, it has expanded our US program significantly. So we feel the need to do the work for the sake of our partner. This all runs through the state-of-the-art high-tech global headquarters in Santa Barbara that I just touched on. This building was constructed in 2018, so it's relatively new to Direct Relief considering our history. But because of that, it has expanded our access to partners around the world. For instance, in 2018, we were sending and supplying about 3.6 million pounds of supplies and pharmaceutical goods through 11,000 shipments. In 2023, just this year, we have just shy of 6 million pounds shipped through just shy of 20,000 shipments. So it's almost doubled our capacity to serve our partners around the world. Because of this, we actually have one of the United States' largest cold chain infrastructures. Cold chain is a particular way to store medicine like insulin. We obviously pay attention to medicine markets, et cetera, and more pharmaceutical manufacturers are producing life-saving medications that need to be temperature controlled. And so we paid attention to that 5 or 6 years ago. We needed to expand our cold chain capacity so that we could better serve our partners and that they could better serve their patients. We wouldn't be able to do this without the help of our corporate and strategic partners. The right partners allow direct relief to build business relationships for humanitarian benefit. And not only do we have partners like FedEx and Google, we have partnerships like the Pan American Health Organization that gives us access to difficult regions and information as well as local cultural context so that we are able to better serve partners so that they are better able to serve their patients. Product contributions from people like Eli Lilly and Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson. There's 120 plus global pharmaceutical company and medical companies that allow us to enable treatment of millions of patients annually. We have about $1.8 billion in wholesale of annual product donations from our partners, which is just absolutely incredible. All sorts of things are donated at any given time. Throughout the last couple of years of our partnership with Eli Lilly, they've donated about $35 million of insulin. Again, the cold chain logistics is something that really enables direct relief to leverage its existing network and access a large amount of product to donate and to provide grants for. Another nice fun fact is that FedEx does most of our logistics and shipping in the United States. Without their partnership, we'd be looking at a lot higher cost in regards to getting the supply and product to our partners. So it really is a comprehensive, expansive partnership opportunity within direct relief that empowers not only our organization, but the vast network of health partners throughout the world. An interesting thing that sort of sets direct relief apart is that we are incredibly tech savvy. We have our very own research and analysis team, which uses data science tools and techniques to map and investigate disaster impacts and responses in near real time. It allows direct relief to evaluate and report on the causes and consequences of particular disasters. Here, what you're looking at is an example of how the organization utilizes data. All of the red lines that you see in the screenshot represent the paths of hurricanes in the last 10 years. Understanding historical data empowers direct relief to forecast where disasters and emergencies and severe weather occur. So it allows us to zero in on geographical locations that may be vulnerable to these events. All of the orange icons that you see dotted throughout the coastline represent the health centers that have received a pre-packed hurricane preparation kit. Say that 10 times fast. These kits enable health centers to serve populations of about 100 patients for 3 to 5 days post-event within the United States. And the international kits that we send to our health partners in Haiti, in Dominican Republic, Honduras, Guatemala, et cetera, are about 1,650 pounds, and they can serve 3,000 patients for up to 3 months. We identify partners along the paths of forecasted hurricanes each year before hurricane season, so that we are better enabling our health partners to serve the populations that they are responsible for caring for. At the end of hurricane season, if the health centers don't access the hurricane kits in the response of an event, they are then able to access the medication and supplies and use it for the remainder of the year. And this happens every year. So we are compiling data, using it to forecast, using it to communicate to our partners and understand the overall need and whether or not we need to ship these out to them. It has been an incredible lifeline for people along the coast and along the Gulf. And it's a really successful program that would not be possible without this data and analysis. So the right products. Direct Relief carries an array of medicines and medical supplies in the 130,000 square foot warehouse. One of our biggest suppliers is insulin. We are one of the leading charitable insulin suppliers in the world and in the United States. But not only do we supply insulin, we have cancer therapies, hypertension, vaccines. During COVID, California, right before COVID, experienced an array of battering of severe wildfires. And we had this surplus of N95 masks. Shortly after that, Australia caught on fire. And so we were able to supply Australia with a ton of N95 masks. And during COVID, we had that as well. So not only are we supplying people with life-saving medication, but we're also helping communities in affected areas with things like personal protective equipment, syringes, catheters, asthma medication, et cetera. For the kids, like I spoke about, not only do we serve our local health partners with hurricane kits, but we have wildfire kits, cholera kits, midwife and perinatal kits, which have been such a success. They are actually developed in association with another organization called the International Confederation of Midwives. The midwife kit was such an astounding success that the ICM actually was the first ever midwife kit to be formally endorsed by the ICM as the global standard by which midwives should be equipped. We ship them out to people all over the globe, and it has seen incredible success. Another thing that we supply that has maybe not so much notoriety, but is incredibly important, are things like vitamins and rehydration kits. During disasters, pregnant women are incredibly vulnerable. And so having neonatal vitamins to help them get through the immediate impact is something that has been an incredible thing to witness as well. Here we just have some photos around the not just network of health partners, but the people that help us assist in getting the aid to people in need. Sometimes we utilize people that are involved with military operations, people out on the ground, you name it. People in need are more than welcome or more than happy to see people with these orange boxes that know that help is on the way. This is a brief map of countries who have received aid from Direct Relief in 2023. As you can see, it's pretty global. There have been dozens upon dozens of countries who are within our vast network of partners. So since January 1st, 2022, there have been about 2,800 healthcare facilities in 101 countries that have received humanitarian aid, nearly $3.3 billion in wholesale of medical aid have been delivered to 2,600 healthcare facilities through 34,000 deliveries. There was $104 million in granted in financial assistance. We are the largest provider of charitable medicines in the U.S. and PPE globally, so about 15.9 million pounds of goods. And we are the largest facility of pre-positioning of emergency response medical supplies globally, so back to that hurricane preparedness kit as well. The Direct Relief has the highest rating possible on Charity Navigator and other publications. So that really means that we exceed or meet best practices by industry standards across all areas.
The divisions in the world are stark. recent years have shown some of the largest natural disasters ever in history. And that really hits hardest the people who had the least to begin with. These people need help. It would be a real tragedy if all these advances in science and health and technology only benefit people in a position to pay for them. There should be no lesser standard if you happen to be poor. These problems can be overcome.
Again, Direct Relief's mission truly is to improve the lives and health of people affected by poverty and emergencies so that they can realize their human potential, full human potential, and live a life of greatness.
The need is so great. I mean, every time you turn on the news, you just see what's happening. And it's so critical to have organizations that send immediate help. And as you said, without help, without your health, it's really hard to cope with anything else.
With anything. Exactly. Right. Yeah. And, you know, the immediacy of the work that we do is only possible by having these relationships with our health partners around the world. I can think of, you know, the Maui wildfires that impacted the island in early August of this year. And within 24 hours of the blaze, Direct Relief was sending requested medical supplies. And that was because we had these trusted relationships with people on the island, and we were getting real-time information. They were able to access the partner portal, and we were able to assist them as quickly as possible.
When that happens, do they send you information specifically saying we need X number of wildfire kits, or there's X number of, you know, pregnant women and we need more, more of those perinatal kits?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Actually, the midwife kits was one of the biggest shipments that we had ever done in the history of Direct Relief in terms of how to support pregnant women and, you know, pregnant bodies. So we have a partner called Healthy Mothers, Healthy Babies. That was on the island of Oahu, and they were able to actually give us real-time information around how they were going to assist the need on Maui. And so we had this line of communication with them pretty much during and still to this day. And so we're still providing aid, but it is specifically requested. And so much of that is important and probably very overlooked. Using Maui again as an example, there were reports a couple weeks after the fire that there were too many clothes. People want to help and people want to react and people want to participate in humanitarian aid. But when you're not sending the specifically requested aid, it can backlog and create more of a chaotic environment. So it's great intentions, but sometimes the knee-jerk reaction to just send a bag of clothing might not necessarily be assisting in what they need. And so, yeah, there was always this line of communication. They were sending particular requests and we were able to fulfill them with immediacy.
Yeah, no, that's so important, just being able to have that direct line of communication to those on the ground so you can provide them exactly what is needed. Now, with all of these disasters happening, you have your research, you have your data and analytics team that can help with monitoring what's happening. How do you harness data to understand when it's time to, I don't know if it's the right phrase, but in a way phase out, because at the beginning you're sending likely more medical supplies to one specific place. And I guess over time it sort of phases out and then you rely more on the local medical partners. How do you assess when to sort of pull back? Do you just rely on the data that's being fed to you from locals?
Yeah, that's a great question. Exactly. We understand that the people who serve their community the day before in an emergency or a severe event are the best people to serve them during and after as well. So we only provide what is requested. And when they feel like they have everything they need, then we stop. We listen to what they need, and we don't want to inundate them with items and supplies when there's no specific request for that. Emergency response has, and they have, you know, it's a phased event where typically in the last two phases, it's a little bit more of a softer, not a breakup per se, but there is, you know, a definite cliff where we respect the request. And if they don't need anything, then we won't provide anything. Morocco was an example of that when the earthquake struck a couple months ago. And they wanted to assess the need themselves. And we waited about 10 days before we got our first request for aid. And then we fulfilled it. A lot of people were asking about what we were doing and educating donors and other people of like mind in regards to having respect for the requests and the people on the ground assessing need is pivotal. And it is something that, again, is often overlooked.
Yeah, thanks for providing that example. Well, I don't want to take up all the time, so I'm very much happy to open up the floor to our audience. So if you have any questions, please raise your hand by clicking on the reactions icon in the webinar controls toolbar at the bottom of your screen, or feel free to send your questions through in the chat, and I'll be happy to ask them as they come through.
Well, I know that Sam had to jump off, but I do see that they asked a question in regards to climate change. That is such an interesting question. And honestly, the timing of it is pretty interesting because we recently had a short documentary with the BBC film one of our programs in responses to a wildfire in Paradise, California. It was called The Campfire. Up until the Maui fire, it was one of the largest or most deadliest wildfires in United States history. And with that and the aftermath, Direct Relief began wondering how climate change is going to be beginning to affect all of us. And with that was born one of our programs called Power for Health, which is where we not only send aid to a particular clinic that might be impacted by an emergency or an event, but we install solar panels on their roof so that they are able to service their communities and patients during an event that might take power out. We understand like health, I absolutely can, just like health, if you're not healthy, everything is challenging. With the course of digital transformation in the last, you know, 25 years, electricity is pivotal and one of the cornerstones of assessing health needs, especially during an emergency. So things like electronic medical records, medication supplies, your refrigeration for your insulin, for instance, all of that goes offline and clinics end up having to close even if they might not be immediately impacted. In California, we're doing this power shut off when it gets windy. So it's really important for clinics and health centers throughout the world to have access to power. And so that was one of those interesting sort of side effects or byproducts of combating, you know, not climate change per se, but this issue that climate change and the expansiveness and how quickly it's accelerating the new problems that we're facing. Direct Relief had to get kind of creative in that regard. And yes, I'd be more than happy to share the link to the documentary. It's pretty incredible. It's short too, so.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll share that with our members afterwards. Joanne, you have a question.
Yes, I remembered to shut my mic on off so I could talk. I did have a question. Actually, you answered several of them, but one of them was Are we able to contact medical folks we know that have extra equipment or extra things that are those? These are people not on your list of large donors that are either make medicine or make equipment. So if number one, is that possible? And then if it is, how does the goods, whatever they may be, get to California? Is that up to the responsibility of the sender?
That's a great question. So we have a huge team of program managers, which essentially manage the relationship of our upstream partners, like the pharmaceutical companies or the manufacturers, suppliers, and then downstream, which is our health partners. I could definitely get you in touch. There is a vetting process because we have this sophisticated license infrastructure and compliance that we have to abide by. Not everything gets approved. Oftentimes it has to come directly from said manufacturer or equipment manufacturer supplier, but I'd be more than happy to connect you with them. They could reach out and assess sort of the fit. And then I'm not entirely sure. I think FedEx, we most of the time, people like Bayer or Pfizer provide the shipping cost, but because we have a relationship with FedEx, that could probably be worked out with the program manager as well.
Thank you.
Sure, of course. Thank you, Joanne.
That sounds great. I noticed, yeah, you partner with several pharmaceutical companies with drugs. There's usually an expiry date. Is it, how do you manage that? Or is it because the need is so great that that's usually not an issue, because as you receive the drugs into your facility, they usually go out pretty quickly? Or how do you manage that whole process?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of both, right? So the different countries have different sort of mandates that they have to comply with. So for instance, you know, let's say aspirin has a 6-month expiration date where the manufacturer has to get rid of it. But, you know, Mexico has a 3-month expiration date. So we will then contact our partners to see if they are interested in, you know, accepting this donation or this gift or this particular surplus of supply of product. But there is a vetting process that our warehouse is compliant with. And we accept almost all of the in-kind donations, but there are a few that if there's no need, you know, and we can't foresee a particular gap to fill it with, we won't accept it.
That makes sense. Yeah, that's helpful to know.
Yeah. It's there's so many nuanced, like, you know, approaches to how we do what we do. And that's, you know, one of the things that our warehouse team has to deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah, and the different countries have different standards, probably also language if you need like specific translations. I'm sure there's a lot to navigate in that arena.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, given like the current news, I'm sure a lot of people would be interested in what type of help is being sent to Gaza right now and what could people do to help?
Yeah, absolutely. So Direct Relief has been supporting partners in Gaza, Lebanon, and the region for years now. We work directly with a local medical nonprofit called ANERA. And it's interesting. I actually just read an email today that they are able to work with other nonprofits in the area that assist in medical need. Because the Rafah border crossing has not been open in the way that we can get as much humanitarian aid in as possible, we've only been able to send over about 200 field medical backpacks. They are in Egypt. A lot of it is based on whether or not the Egypt IOM, which is the International Organization of Migration, has accepted our offer. There's a couple of other things that are in place right now that they're reviewing. but we totally are, we're watching this like a hawk. And it's devastating what's happening right now. But whenever direct relief can get the aid in, we definitely will.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that update.
Yeah,
message.
Of course.
Great. Well, thank you, everybody, for your questions and for joining us for this recording. If you're inspired to get involved and make a difference in your community, we invite you to learn more about Rotary International and the Rotary Club of Worldwide Impact. With that said, I'd like to thank Olivia for being here with us today and turn it back to her for her final remarks. Olivia, the floor is yours again.
Thank you, Kelly. No, I just wanted to take a couple minutes to thank you all for joining today. If you have any questions, comments, my contact information is in the chat box. I would love to hear from you all. And again, Rotary is such an incredible partner of ours, and I am so grateful for your time.
Thank you, Olivia, and thank you everyone for joining us today. Until next time.